That's why I stopped talking.
All right. So, in the part one of this episode, which if you haven't listened to yet, you should go do right now.
Or I'll come and find you and play it on your phone.
That's hilarious and also creepy. We talked about hip-hop music and how important it still is today as Black people. So in this part, we wanted to talk about, because in the first one we spoke about two specific songs, we want to talk about some others that we think are very impactful in the last, you know, 5 years. So the span of time of those songs is within the last 5 years, so they're recent-ish.
And we also have some very old ones, though.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying the visual ones.
Oh, okay.
The videos.
Cool.
Yes. So yeah. So I'm gonna let Jamal start with his tracks, and these are some tracks that we think, again, this is not a case for, you know, trying to prove the validity of hip hop. Like, everybody knows hip hop is valid, right?
Yeah.
But I think our generation and the generation that is now here after us need to be re-educated on some of this stuff. So that's really our goal. And, you know, as a couple, as budding entrepreneurs, as parents, as, you know, Black people, we just wanted to, you know, bring these things to the fore and talk about things that impact our lives and, you know, that perhaps impact your life too. So
we're doing the music video ones, right?
Or whichever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, on my list, I already had, like, right off the top of my head, Changes from Tupac, Dear Mama, and Keep Your Head Up from Tupac. Three songs automatically. Like, to me, he's not only telling you what the life of a Black man being in the hood, but also a Black man who's also misunderstood. Bang!
Bars!
I'm out here. I really fished for that, I'm not gonna lie. I was playing it in my mind the entire time on how I was gonna execute this. But, again, like, he's so poetic with his music, it's crazy. Like, he's not such a heavy lyricist, but when he speaks, like, he makes you listen to what he's saying. You know, even just something as simple as Changes. A lot of the things that he spoke about back then, I mean, we've seen come to fruition. I mean, the biggest one, seeing a Black president in Barack Obama.
Yeah.
You know, which was the biggest thing, which I wish he lived to see it.
Yeah.
But selling crack to kids and stuff like that, and, you know, hey, I got to get paid. You know, and Tupac saying, you know what, I guess that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And he also understands that, you know, some things won't change
right
when where they should. And he's talking about how the American media attacking him for every little thing that he did. Even something as simple as writing Thug Life, tattooing it on his body. Mm-hmm. And to the average person, when you hear Thug Life, it's a guy carrying a weapon and he's gonna go hurt somebody, or he sells dope and all that other bullcrap.
Yeah.
To me, when I hear Thug Life, it's a hardworking Black person who's doing it by any means to get by in life. Mm-hmm. To support for him and his family. Thug is not a such a derogatory term, especially for me. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I think like a thug as in I come from the bottom, I'm still here, but I'm making the best I can out of what I got. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm counting my blessings. I'm raising my kid. I'm supporting my family. Mm-hmm. And I work hard in a gutter where I wasn't supposed to win.
Yeah. That's just like a hustler, really.
Yeah.
In a Jamaican context, you're hustling, right?
For sure.
Which would be synonymous with that, with the Thug Life mentality. But yeah, I recently got into Tupac. I won't lie. Recently. Because,
shame on you. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. Because growing up, I didn't really listen. Like, in the 90s and stuff, I didn't really listen to hip-hop like that. It was in the 2000s that I started listening to hip hop, and my introduction to hip hop was, again, the mainstreams, the Ludacris and Nelly and those people, right?
Yeah.
I never grew up listening to Biggie and Tupac. A lot of
Southern music, okay.
You know, so, yeah, I guess. Somehow, ATL, I don't know.
Yeah.
And wherever Nelly's from. Louis?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but as an adult, because I had friends who did listen to them. It just wasn't me, because in my household, that's not happening. But growing up and listening to Tupac and Biggie, and all I knew about Tupac and Biggie was that they were dead and that they got killed in gun violence. That's all I knew about them growing up.
Which is generally anybody
which is
knows.
Again, in the previous episode, we touched on that whole, you know, misconception. So I really found the poetic justice of Tupac.
Wow.
I didn't do that on purpose.
I don't believe you anymore.
I didn't, though. I swear. Because the movie. Three. Anyway, that was just awesome. But I found that that's what he was doing. And that's why I fell in love with his music. And I can say this because I'm secure in my relationship. He's also hot. And I like looking at hot black men. I'm just going to put that out there.
Meh. Right?
So the two things worked out for me.
Listen, guys. Guys, I have to tell you something. If that shit bothers you, you're not built for it.
So one of the things that I remember brought me to Tupac was the poem "The Rose That Grew from Concrete," and when I read that poem, I was like, this is the same Tupac. Like, I'm looking around the room like, I thought Tupac was just all about guns and death, and they're like, yeah, it's the same Tupac. And I'm like, wow. It's a simple poem, and it's so profound. And I found out that he wrote poetry and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I saw the movie with Janet Jackson, and it's just a spiral of things. But again, in his short span of life, because he died when he was, what, 25?
Maybe younger than
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And in that 2-3 year span that he pumped out music and he shaped hip-hop, to this day, still, you know, impacts so many people all over the world. And that is the power of hip-hop, right? Same thing with Biggie. You hear about Biggie Smalls.
Yeah.
You think about selling drugs.
He was more in tune, you know, I don't want to say infatuated, but he was more in tune with things like paranoias and death.
Yeah.
Like, he rapped a lot about that.
He was a mental health poster child.
Yeah, like, a lot of the things he was rapping about was very, very dark.
And people at the time would never get that. And even now, when a black person, and as a teacher, and a black student acts out, no one thinks about their mental health. It's about them being naturally violent, and oh, maybe they don't have two parents, or maybe, you know, they were a crack baby. I swear, like, this is the reality. This is what people go to.
Yeah,
that no one says, I wonder if this child is depressed. I wonder if this child is bipolar. I wonder if this child has, you know, other issues that need to be diagnosed and dealt with.
For sure,
right? And Biggie's music. That's what he was doing. And people don't realize that. But when you listen to so many of his songs, he's talking about suicide. He's talking about not trusting anybody.
The song is literally called Suicidal Thoughts.
Yeah.
Like,
so many of his songs, that was the core. Right? And look at the guy from Linkin Park, Chester.
Oh, poor guy.
Who did a similar thing. Like, honestly, I don't know. You'd have to be deaf, dumb, and blind. And by dumb, I mean can't speak, to not see that this guy was depressed.
Yeah, he had issues.
Okay?
Yeah.
Like, every song was about this. But it was a different response
because
he killed himself.
Yeah.
Whereas Biggie was shot and killed, right? And people, when Biggie was shot and killed, oh, that was coming to him.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy, oh my God, mental health, and we need to care about. But both of them were singing about the same thing,
and I mean,
in,
like,
different ways,
but I mean, like, the only defense I can really give society is that back then, mental health and things like that we weren't really like too keen on or aware of, that hey man, people are actually not feeling okay, you know, like no one really gave it thought back then as opposed to now where it's very prominent. We're in a sensitive era.
Yeah.
So I mean, an era that I really not go elaborate in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, like it was two different things back then, and like the internet wasn't as prominent as it is today. And
the
culture, society in general was just different.
It was, but I still think, though, even then in the 90s, there was a wave, right, of understanding, you know, especially depression and suicide, because it was increasingly happening with kids. Look at the, you know, Nirvana and that wave. Right, that genre of music and the fans of that kind of music. Look at the rise of people taking, you know, hallucinatory drugs, LSD and stuff like that. And people were concerned about those kids and drugs with them and the access to drugs with these kids and the impact on these kids and their mental health and depression and all of that. But on the black people side, it was all about gang violence is a problem and black people need the full extent of the law on them and the carding and all of these things that we saw in numerous movies and we heard in the music that Biggie and those guys were singing about, right? The police brutality, Rodney King, we could go on and on.
Yeah.
That was their reality. So yeah. People, it's not that people didn't talk about mental health, it's just it just didn't apply to black people for some reason.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't today. It's better now, but not where it should be. So
I just find that more black people are taking it upon themselves to go get the help they need instead of the outside giving us the help that we might need.
Yeah, and especially kids, because kids don't know that that's the problem. Kids don't even know they have a problem sometimes. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so for Biggie, you know, his contribution, I think, was shedding light on that.
For sure.
Of course, we are going to keep saying this. We're not denying that these people also sang about violence and whatever. But as you said before, it's from the perspective of their lives, what they were experiencing, what they were going through.
Because they were, I'm not saying they necessarily are glorifying it in any which way. It's just, again, it's a part of the art form. It's either you get it or you don't.
Yeah.
And that's what it kind of boils down to.
And the authenticity, again, is that they were experiencing these things. These guys nowadays, like we talked about with what's his name, Tekashi. He's not out here doing these things.
He's really not.
But they feel like this is something they have to do and have to sing about for people to respect them. And that is the problem. That's what hip hop has become instead of what it used to be, which was an outlet for people going through these things and singing about it in a creative way.
And I mean, people could probably try and make the argument that because of the artists of the early 90s, in the 2000s, they kept rapping about these type of things that it propagated into a new issue where if you didn't have those problems, you couldn't be in hip hop, you couldn't be in the genre. Mm-hmm. When in all actuality, it's like it's the authenticity that they were performing that, you know, generally a lot of them went through the same type of things, but it was handled differently and they may have went through different things but the same topic.
Yeah,
it's just the way it was presented.
Yeah.
And yeah, to the common eye, they're glorifying it. They're glorifying gun violence and drugs and pimps and all that other crap.
Mm-hmm.
But in all actuality, that's just what they were. That was their life.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they knew. And for us to take in that information and make it negative, I think that's very irresponsible.
Yeah.
Instead of using what they're telling and educating the next wave.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our part one, we were talking about how our government's making cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Education is so important.
Yeah.
If we took the time to educate the youth about these things, like, again, I can't say that my son isn't allowed to listen to these types of musics and whatnot, and the message that he may get from it he may not understand it, but that's my responsibility to make sure that hey, he's not glorifying this type of life. Mm-hmm. Unless he's Future or something, then he's glorifying it. Mm-hmm. But growing up, I didn't have artists doing that. And it didn't take until I was an adult to understand the message that they were putting out.
And then the other thing, even though this was their reality, they could also see that something was wrong with that reality, which makes a difference.
Yeah, right? they talk about trying to get out.
Exactly. They would sing about, like, again, with changes, right? They would sing about the negatives that they're seeing. All you see is racist faces and all of that. And talk about hate. Yeah, and talk about how it affected them and how it colored their reality and how we need to fix it. It wasn't just, yo, bang, 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 and kill, 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 and this, and weed, 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 and drugs, and with no context and with no purpose. It wasn't like that.
Because they understood the responsibility of it.
Right? And it was, again, these are, the other thing people need to understand, these were like teenagers and 20-something-year-olds. These were not fully formed adults, you know, with the experience of, you know, having a home and doing all these things and contributing to society and then going back and rapping about something for the fun of it to make money.
Like they started this in the gutter.
This was in the process of growing up. This was their life. Look at NWA, right? They were kids pretty much growing up in the hood and singing about what was happening to them on a daily basis.
And mind you, these are angry young men.
Exactly. And then people took their anger and their frustration and made their money commentary off of it. Yeah, made money off of it, but also to, as Roy said in the song, to use it against you, to incriminate you, to put you in the system. Exactly. Which Crooked also nicely followed up with, to say that it's all a trick for them to profit, for them to, you know what, this is super deep and I could talk about this forever. So I just want to succinctly say that, you know, the point we're trying to make with the 90s artists right now is just that was their life, that was their experiences. What it is today is not necessarily the same thing.
No.
It is that people, again, took that model, realized the impact it had, told these young people nowadays that you need to do this to be valid. You need to act like this to be valid. Don't sing about your actual reality. No one wants to hear that. This is your reality. This is your authenticity. And I just want to add to this Nigerian author whose name I always get wrong, so forgive me, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. She did a TED Talk on the dangers of a single story. And basically, she was an author in Nigeria. She grew up in Nigeria in a middle-class home, migrated to the States. And in going to the States in the early 90s, the idea of people from Africa, you live in a hut, you don't speak English, you don't wear clothes, and how basically, to be authentically African, you had to fit that narrative. So just like that, it's the same thing here. That nowadays, the hip-hop narrative has been created by people outside of the life, people outside of the race. And they are pushing that on our kids and on the new generation and destroying the older heads who know better too, who are bashing these kids and bashing, you know, what they've been force-fed. Instead of re-educating them.
And that's what I have respect a few of the old heads about, because they'll actually come out and tell you, like, we weren't making this music because it was cool. We were doing it because it was a lifestyle we were living and we needed to create awareness for it. And some of them even regret making that music because they realize how irresponsible it was too. Yeah. Because now they have a new generation coming in rapping about that stuff. And now, because they're rapping about it, they have to live it. They have to do it.
Yeah, because you're not real if you didn't actually do it, which is, again, explains the surge in certain crimes that are happening, you know, that seem kind of, you know, random. But it's about these guys proving themselves and getting into gangs and being initiated by doing these stupid things. you know, you walk up and you stab somebody, you're in, because now you can go in a song and say you shank somebody, and yeah, it's legit.
Like, even on Royce's new album, The Allegory, like, there's a rapper, this West Side Gunn, he's up and coming new artist. He simply said in Buffalo, you catch 5 bodies, then you famous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of attitude is that?
Crazy.
And over in the song, he's saying, all we did was sell dope.
Yeah.
People don't realize how messed up that is.
Yeah.
They're oh man, catch 5 bodies, I'm famous, and I just got to sell dope, and I'm on the map. No.
No. That's the opposite.
It's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
So, and again, that leads into 2 very particular artists that me and you are both big fans of.
Yeah.
And that's J. Cole and Kendrick.
Yep.
Who?
Jermaine.
Who took the route of authenticity, being themselves, and making good music.
Like, there are no words to describe how much I respect J. Cole. He was another reason that I feel so passionate about hip hop, because hearing this man, the way he tells the stories that he tells, you'd think he didn't really put much effort into it. Yeah. It's just so natural, but you can see the craftsmanship, right? And this particular song, GOMD, Get Off My Dick, that he has on the Forest Hills album, the video, again, it's important to watch the video, but even the lyrics themselves complement the video.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and on the note of authenticity and the power of hip-hop, so J. Cole has, he's basically biracial, or for want of a better word, light skin. And in this video, the song itself is talking about, you know, people coming at him as an artist, telling him how he's changed from who he used to be, and trying to, again, fit him into a narrative that he's not. That's what the song itself is about. And then in the video, he used the metaphor of slavery and the house slave. And he, in the video, is the house slave, which comes back to the authenticity. Because, yes, he is of a lighter complexion. If he was around in the time of slavery, that's exactly where he would be, right? And then in the video, he is the house slave who has certain privileges, of course. You get to be inside. You're not outside, you know, digging up the crop or whatever. And the field slaves in the video are upset with him, right? They think he's a sellout, just like what he's saying in the song. But in turn, he uses his privilege to help them rise up. And then they unite. And not only do they unite, they also have a white ally in the song, which is one of the slave owner's daughter. Now, that's controversial in itself, you know, and it seems to go against the idea that we don't need them to exist. But it also, I like it because it's a message about how we really all have a role to play in combating racism, in combating these perpetuations of, you know, who we are and who we should be.
Because it's not just a responsibility to Black people and Black people alone. It's a responsibility to everybody.
Everybody.
And that's the misconception people have. That racism, it starts and ends with that race when it really doesn't. And that's just what I feel like. Other races, including ours, just act like, as long as it's not me, who cares? Because I have close friends that I consider brothers, Filipino, Sri Lankan, Indian, and I wouldn't appreciate anyone, even white, I wouldn't appreciate anyone coming at them calling them crackers or you just, because he's Indian, they're all Punjabi. And mm-hmm. No, that's not right. You can't do that to people. Even a silly meme I posted in a group chat about Sri Lankan people, and like, but isn't it in India though? And everyone starts fighting in the elevator. Like, you got to be aware of what you're saying, because you have a social responsibility not only to yourself, but to the people around you. Mm-hmm. And what you say impacts everyone around you. And that's why I feel like there's a lack of, once again, I'm going to circle back to this word, education.
Yep.
It all boils down to education. And I'm not saying every person who has a teacher's license is the best educator in the world and they can tell you everything. Because nope. Guess what? 99.5% of those people are only gonna teach you what's in the book. Mm-hmm. And whatever the book was made to tell you was propaganda at times,
yep.
If not all the time. So just be self-aware of what you're learning and the information you're taking in. Because if I've learned anything in this life, you're always learning. You're continuing to expand your mind and grow.
Yep. And that's what good hip-hop does. It packages this knowledge in a certain accessible way for people who don't get it in the classroom. Right? And as a teacher myself, when I teach poetry and when I teach literature, I try to use unconventional texts. Just the other day, I had this discussion with my class where I was telling them about where the English canon comes from, right? And that's the collection of texts that have been decided by somebody somewhere that these are the texts that you should teach when you teach English literature. Who's on the list? Shakespeare. Tennessee Williams. All these white men born hundreds of years ago, who, I'm not knocking Shakespeare because I love Shakespearean texts and for what they are and what they can do, but I'm just saying you rarely hear about using the culture of the people you're teaching to teach them. You rarely hear that, right? And I teach a lot of students from different backgrounds, and I do my best to incorporate that in my classroom. It's the same thing with hip-hop. I've taught using lyrics of songs before. Common as another very poetic right? When Kanye was Kanye,
Before he got all weird.
Yeah, and stuff like that, right? And again, in other cultures too, but this is about hip-hop, so I'm focusing on hip-hop right now. But the point is how we use these things. And another person that is amazing at that, Kendrick.
Hands down.
Oh, Lord.
The greatest artist of this era, in my opinion.
To be honest, I can't disagree. I mean, he's up there with J. Cole to me in terms of the way he puts things together. But I think he's on another level in the packaging.
For sure.
Like, he's more in your face and jarring. And I like that about Kendrick. And he's
super thought-provoking.
Yeah.
So, because, I mean, even if I think about, like, his entire first album, which if anyone hasn't heard yet, it's an amazing story, honestly, from start to finish. If you skip a song or a skit, you're not gonna get the album whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I strongly advise you go listen to it. And that's gonna circle back to like the Tupac, Biggie type, I lived in the hood, this is from my point of view what it means and what it meant for me growing up in that environment. Mm-hmm. And then he came up with To Pimp a Butterfly, where he became conscious with songs like Black of the Berry, talking about, you know, how being black, these are the stereotypes we faced. Mm-hmm. And these are the lanes that we have to fall in. And it's just like, we shouldn't have to. Mm-hmm. We are more than what they say we are.
Yeah.
And then you have songs like I Love Myself. Mm-hmm. Which is, again, just talking about just love yourself. You don't need to be second guessing who you are as a human being. And it's not even just solely for black people, but it's for everybody. Mm-hmm. That's all it takes sometimes for you to just love yourself. And you need to go and do that in order to love one another, right? Because if you don't love yourself, you ain't going to love nobody. Mm-hmm. No matter, don't fool yourself into thinking that you can. So it's very important that you do.
Yeah. And with, again, from the visual side of things, with the music video for Humble, again, every time Kendrick does a video, you gotta
pay attention.
You need to just lock yourself in a room and watch it. But just as an example, with the video Humble, and the power of hip hop and the power of the metaphors and the allegories and the connections and the allusions and the poetry that hip hop is. There's just a few like images that really stood out to me. So first of all, in the very first scene of the video, he's in like a Pope outfit, all white, right? Which is the opposite of humility, if you really think about it. The Pope is seen as like God on earth.
Yeah.
And he's singing about being humble, which is a huge, I love that contrast right? And then there's other like religious undertones in the whole video. The video is shot in a church for some parts of it. There's a choir in some parts of it. But one part that I really liked, so they're outside and their heads are on fire. And some of their heads are wrapped in rope, which, you know, we could use that to represent lynching or whatever. But the heads on fire, as a religious allusion to the Bible, is when, you know, Jesus went away and sent the Holy Spirit on the apostles, and their heads were literally on fire in the Bible, and they were speaking in tongues, and the things that they were saying could only be understood by some people. And that image alone just shows you how deep Kendrick is. Even if that wasn't his intention, which I really doubt it wasn't his intention, he's saying how the things he's saying, everybody's not gonna get it. But he's saying profound things that you really have to humble yourself to hear.
Pay attention to.
To pay attention, right? It's just, like, if you could see my face right now, like, it's just so astounding to me, the art that this man has.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? And we could talk about, in the same vein, Gambino.
Yeah, this is America, which is the exact opposite. Where this is, like, more vain, more in your face. Like, this is America.
Mm-hmm.
And if it catches you slipping, this is going to be you.
Yeah.
And it's literally just showing you a whole lot of chaos and one dude dancing. Like, that ain't nothing wrong. And it's telling, and that's, and I took that as in, who cares? Just dance. We're all going to dance and ignore what's happening around us. Because as long as it ain't me, I'm going to keep Melly rocking. Like, you can't, you gotta look around and pay attention to what's happening in front of you.
Exactly.
The TV, the media, everything has desensitized you to what's happening in front of you, that you can't even see it, and it's right there in front of you.
Yeah, and even when you do see it, you don't see it, right? Because in the video, he is dressed in the caricature of, I think the word I'm looking for is Sambo. There's another word. Forgive me. We've been talking a lot.
Yeah, we're tired.
But basically with the, again, back to slavery, the person that would, you know, do the minstrel kind of show, the person that would just dance for massa, the person who just does what he's told, right? And he is killing people in the video. He is witnessing other people getting killed in the video. And there's a random white horse running around the place in the video.
Yeah, I didn't understand what was going on. Like,
and there's just all these things happening, but he just keeps on dancing, right? And again, it's a direct reference to us as Black people, especially in America, but other places too.
Yeah, for sure.
We have become so individualized. We're not looking at our brothers and sisters suffering. We're not looking at the children who need us right now. We're not looking at our elders who are on their way out and need us to be there for them. We're not looking at all these problems. Instead, we're looking just, I want to make a quick money. I want to rap about hubba hubba hubba, and I want to be famous in my 15 minutes, and I don't care about the consequences.
Exactly.
Right? That's what that song tells me. And again, the whole artistry of the music. I think the last two we're going to talk about is Joyner Lucas.
Those, again, two very powerful songs.
Very heavy.
With I'm Sorry and I'm Not a Racist.
Yeah.
I'm not a racist. I'm sure most people have heard by now. And again, we've been touching on racism for so long. I won't delve too deep into it. Mm-hmm. Just go watch it. Gives you kind of an idea of, mm-hmm. of both perspectives from a white guy and a black kid. Just go watch it.
Yeah.
It'll do you some justice. But I want to touch on I'm Sorry, because that's, again, a song on two sides, the victim and the person that's affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
And in I'm Sorry, the beginning verse is basically Joyner's best friend writing, saying, you know, these are the reasons why he doesn't want to live anymore, and he feels like the world would be better off without it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being, I don't know if the right word is a suicide survivor per se is what I want to use.
Yeah.
Well, I faced a lot of adversities and where I felt like the world was bigger than me and I didn't know how to handle it. All my problems were so big that I was beyond trying to solve it. And I was backed into a corner where I felt like the only escape was death.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing that person feel almost the exact same way I felt, where I just felt overwhelmed by everything. And I just felt like in the position I was in, especially, who could care about a person like me, and why would I affect anybody? I'm sure the world keeps turning after I leave. And hearing that song and replaying that through my head now, it's a really like conscious decision you have to make. It's not something that you can just do all willy-nilly, because you've made the conscious decision that your life is no longer worth living. And that takes a lot. Even in all my darkest days, to be brought to that point, it takes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
To actually say, you literally, people every day say, I give up. I don't know what to do. You haven't given up. Because if you did, you wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
I have given up before. And then you start seeing the flip side from Joyner's point of view, where his best friend took his own life, and you see the pain, the emotion, the questions. Why did he do that? Was it because I didn't give you the attention you needed? Maybe I should have paid more attention to you. And the anger. How could you do this? Selfish act.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that you wouldn't affect anyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling like you're better off being gone than here with me. Because now I lost that friend.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So like, that song alone educates you and makes you more aware of like being the person in that position. It teaches you who you may be affecting.
Mm-hmm.
And being the person on the outside with a friend that's dealing with these things, it brings attention to why you might need to be more involved in that friend's life.
Yeah. And especially for black men, it's so rare for that vulnerability that he demonstrated in the song.
For sure.
And in the like, I cried watching that video.
You did. I hate it when you do that.
Yeah. And I might cry again right now.
Oh, I'm going away.
Where are you going?
I'm
going
to go somewhere else.
No.
Don't start.
We're at home. You can't leave. This is where we live.
You just expose us.
Yes. But anyway, it's just the vulnerability, as I was saying before, again, completely contradicting that false narrative of what hip hop is supposed to be. And here's a guy tatted up, thick, you know, you look at him, you have every right to be scared for your life. Not to be stereotypical, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like, he has that physical narrative going on of the thug life hip hop guy.
And it's funny because for a few months he was giving $500 away to single mothers.
Yeah. And Joyner has done so much.
giving back
and awareness,
yeah,
you know, to mental health issues,
yeah,
for especially for black men,
yeah,
right? And just hearing what you said, because same thing in the I'm Not a Racist video, like, he has this thing where he shows both sides of the story.
Yeah.
And I really love that about his music,
because it doesn't feel like you're vilifying one side.
Exactly. And it helps, it reaches the audience on both sides, because yeah, there are people who have known loved ones who have committed suicide, and there are people who have the thoughts of committing suicide.
Yeah.
And similar to you, when I was a teenager, I attempted suicide as well.
Yeah.
I was in an extremely dark place. I had no idea what was wrong with me. And this is news to people that know me, because I've never really told anybody outside of a select few of this. But anyway, I had those issues for years, you know. I was depressed and I hated myself and I thought I was worthless, you know. And there wasn't, at the time, my outlet was music like Evanescence.
Great band.
Which, in retrospect, probably not the best outlet, you know, because they would sing about suicide and depression a lot, is what I'm trying to say. But from a kind of almost mythical fantasy voice that the lead singer has, and not something authentic to a person like me who's a Black woman. I didn't have that, or I couldn't find that, because at that age in my life, hip-hop was not that, and I wouldn't have gone there looking for it. If I had known then what I knew now, if I had known there were people like, you know, Lauryn Hill and, you know,
big up to Lauryn Hill, The Roots.
Yeah, Erykah Badu.
Yep.
If I had known about them the right way, and if I had seen people like me reflected in that positive way in music that time, it might have helped me even more.
Agreed.
And I didn't have that, right? Until later on.
You know what?
I got exposed to it.
I'm not going to say, because when you touched on Evanescence, you said it, maybe it wasn't the best music to listen to at the time. But you know what? Maybe it was, because for everybody, it's therapeutic.
It kind of pushes me over the edge.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
In an uncontrolled space, it could be dangerous.
Yeah, because I binged it. I came home every day from school. That's all I would listen to.
Yeah.
To the point where my mom hid my DVD because she felt like it was
doing things.
It was demonic or something.
Just like my computer.
but anyway, not to stray too far from the point of Joyner. So again, this is the thing about hip hop, that it is so multifaceted, so many layers. It is so deep and shallow when it wants to be. But who isn't?
Exactly.
That's humanity.
When you hear rock music, it's the same thing.
Yeah, like you have punk rock, who people think is trash, and you have heavy metal, and
it's a whole bunch of screaming, white people screaming. Yeah, no, there's more to it,
right? But it bothers me every time when it comes to us that we always get treated as less than.
Yeah.
You know? So, for sure. So my hope is from this everlastingly long
Jesus
podcast that you learned something, that there was some enlightenment to being Black and hip-hop and what it means, even if you're not a Black person listening to this, but at least maybe some misconceptions and stereotypes that you had,
just give it a chance and educate yourself.
Yeah.
And again, you don't even have to go out and listen to the Shallow song that I would actually listen to. I'm not gonna lie, I listen to everything except for mumble rap. I don't like that stuff.
Yeah, I can't get into that. I'm sorry.
But
I'm not sorry, but I'm sorry.
Generally, like, if you want that kind of music, that kind of therapeutic music that educates and teaches and stuff, it's out there.
Yeah.
It really is. You just need to find it.
And you need to open your mind to it. And you need to understand that certain people, especially Black people, are not painted with one single brush.
Yeah.
We're not all the same. And that's impossible for everybody to all be the same.
Because, again, like,
and yeah,
you look at me for the first time and you know I listen to hip-hop and rap. But what some people don't know, I listen to heavy metal a lot.
Yes, he does.
I like Alexis on Fire, Breaking Benjamin, Disturbed, Avenged Sevenfold, AC/DC. Yeah. Like, just to name a few. I could go on forever with bands that I love.
Mm-hmm.
I like listening to symphony music from musical scores from Star Wars, some video Zimmerman, games. Hans Zimmerman, stuff. I love.
Yeah.
The Gladiator theme song is my favorite.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I listen to a lot of different facets of music. It's just, you wouldn't know that by just looking at me.
Yeah.
But you gotta open your mind to it.
Yeah. All right.
Finally, someone let the Walfords out of the room.
Well, again, let us know your thoughts. We would love to interact with you as well. You know, maybe even feature you in an upcoming podcast, your comments or something like
yeah,
that.
So for sure.
Drop us a line. And thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.